On today's episode of Locked On Suns, how Kevin Durant and the Phoenix Suns stack up in a crowded Western Conference, plus one under-the-radar factor that makes me that much more excited about Kevin Durant joining the Suns. Let's go.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past six seasons, a writer at Suns.com, and the host of the Just Basketball Show wherever you get podcasts. Thank you so much for making Locked On Suns your first listen. Today, we are everywhere. You can follow us wherever you are finding this show. Hit follow, hit subscribe, join this movement. Is that right? Enjoy the rest of the season right along with me. We're everywhere, including YouTube. If you are on YouTube, hit the bell down below, get a notification when a new show goes live, and drop a comment with your thoughts on the Western Conference and how the Suns stack up in it. You can also follow along at Locked On PHX Suns, where after every game we do our seven words or less game takes, and I'll retweet and find some silly stuff to throw on that feed as well. One more way to connect with Locked On Suns and make this team, make this show your first listen, and get everything you need about this team. We're going to dive into the standings. I'm going to give you the one team I think the Suns should want to avoid, and the one team that the Suns might want to target playing in this conference, but we'll really hit on just about every team in the matchups within that. Today's show, guys, is brought to you by the FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more by visiting FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. More from them later in the show. Let's dive in. All right. So, really, when I think about what team the Suns should want to play, to me, it's less so specific teams and more so types of teams. All right. Now, I think I want to start with who they should want to avoid, because that's the juicier matchups. That's probably the more likely thing to have happen here. Also, unfortunately, because it is such a crowded conference, because there have been so many injuries. And so I want to start with the Dallas Mavericks. And the thing that I think this matchup illustrates more so than anything else is the type of team, as I said, that Dallas illustrates more so than even, yes, it's Luka, yes, it's Kyrie, yes, it's the team that just beat the Suns last year. More so than that, what it does is, what that matchup does is it forces Booker and Durant to defend. And that, more than anything else, is, I think, what you're afraid of if you're the Suns. Not afraid like it can't work or it's an automatic L or you're just screwed, but afraid of in terms of it's going to really push you. It's going to really test you. It's what you want to avoid, right? The Suns, let's take a team that maybe I'm probably not going to talk about on either direction, which is the New Orleans Pelicans, mostly because I don't know what to make of them, right? But in that matchup, yeah, Durant would have to guard Ingram. I guess I shouldn't say that they have to defend, that it's a matchup that makes the Suns have to defend, but it's a matchup that challenges the defensive limitations of those Suns superstars, right? The Pelicans, it kind of lines up. You would have, you know, in most situations, you probably start Torrey Craig against the Pelicans. You have Craig guard Zion. Yes, you have Durant having to defend Ingram, but that's pretty normal. They're identical. It's like the Spider-Man meme, right? And then, you know, CJ McCollum, maybe that's Booker. He's going to have to play a little more defense in that series than normal himself also, but it's only CJ McCollum, a very, very good player, but, you know, not a difference maker that's going to make or break what you are as a team. But you look at Dallas, Josh Okogie probably would be the starter and the closer, the big minutes fifth guy in that type of a series. He probably guards Kyrie, right? So that's only one. In that case, you probably think, okay, Booker, maybe he's in the clear. But then you get to Luka Doncic, right? And not even to mention Christian Wood, who I don't think you necessarily move heaven and earth to adjust for, but is another scorer that would factor in there. I think with Durant, excuse me, with Luka, you have a couple of options, and I think both of them are the superstars on your team. Or I suppose you could go with starting Torrey Craig, and then you have a Luka Doncic. You're able to defend Luka with Craig, but then who guards Kyrie? And then you're down to Book, right? And so I think as much as that might be an oversimplification, I do think matchups can be sometimes overstated, and we're going to get to a team later that I think illustrates that. That's kind of where I am when it comes to Dallas. I think another team that falls into that category is the Clippers because of a similar type of thing, right? I would imagine the Clippers closing lineup as things currently stand, I would guess it's going to be Gordon, Kawhi, George. I would assume Marcus Morris at this point. And it might not be Eric Gordon. They have some other options themselves. Or it is at the four spot, you know, Covington, Batum. We have Norm Powell. Point is, you're having to account for a lot of people. One of those wings can be guarded by Torrey Craig or Josh Okogie. But for the most part, you're going to have your stars defend. Let's break down what it was in that last game. Well, in the last game, Craig and Okogie both played, right? No Durant. My assumption in a series like that is you would have, I would think Craig starts. I would think actually that Craig guards Kawhi, Booker guards George, and then Durant guards Marcus Morris, and then he's able to be a backline rim protector, and they would probably switch a lot since the Clips like to go small. They like to switch themselves. They kind of pull you into that. Those are really the two teams. But I want to talk about the Nuggets because I don't think it's fair. And I think actually Jackson Frank came on the show last week, if you remember. If you did not listen, go back and do that because we broke this down in even more detail. But he made a really good point when it comes to Denver. And I think this speaks to the matchup stuff maybe being less important. So those are the two teams where the matchups are my worry. I think with Denver, it's a little different. It's not so much that the Nuggets are going to win the little individual micro battles 1-5 in a lineup that are going to give the Suns trouble. It's more so Denver is so good and has to be respected and game planned for and taken seriously to a level that they play the game on their own terms, and you have to respond to them, right? I think with the Clippers and the Mavericks, to a degree, those matchups and Book and KD having to play defense would factor in. But, you know, I listed off Eric Gordon, Norm Powell, Marcus Morris. I'm not sure any of those players can defend the Suns, right? So I might still take the Suns. I think I probably would still take the Suns over Dallas and probably against the Clippers, although we have to see what they look like. With Denver, it's a different story. And I know there's the center matchup, and with a more balanced roster around him, with less responsibility sort of on his shoulders on both ends, you could imagine Jokic having an even better series than he had against Ayton the first time around, although people forget Jokic was pretty incredible in that second round series offensively, even despite Ayton holding up. Really, the thing Ayton did was just not foul, but Jokic still produced and put up numbers. Denver would just be a different challenge because they would just be so hard to stop, period. It's not even that I'm worried about the matchups. You know, Durant can probably guard Gordon or Michael Porter without really having to stretch himself. Booker would probably, in that case, be guarding, I guess, probably Michael Porter Jr., Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, you know, and then Okogie would probably be the starter in that lineup, and you would defend Murray with him, right? So the matchups kind of stack up, but the Nuggets are just such a force to be reckoned with that I think they have to be factored in. And their defense itself, you know, I don't know what they would do. I guess it's a sloppy thing to say, I guess, as somebody trying to give you the breakdown here. But, you know, you hear people like Zach Lowe on his podcast go on and on about how or not on and on. He frequently brings up that the Nuggets have had some things in their back pocket this year to adjust defensively. And I'm not necessarily sure what he thinks they're going to do to get around the fact that neither, because it's also not just Nikola Jokic, neither Jokic or Gordon are really much in the way of rim protectors. So, and they don't have a ton of size. Gordon is somebody who, you know, at U of A was almost like a guard, and then in Orlando when he first came up, he was more of a three. Now he's a four. He's not really a rim protector. Michael Porter Jr. is not going to do much defensively. I get it. I think that they have two decent, you know, point of attack defenders in Murray and in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Bruce Brown could factor in there. Maybe that's part of what they end up doing if they need to guard. You could see Brown actually being somebody who defends Durant decently well, getting kind of underneath him, KCP maybe as well. But I just don't know what, at the end of the day, Denver's going to be able to do to stop you. And so it's different with them, but I probably still pick the Suns over them as well, provided that foul trouble doesn't become too big of an issue, that the Suns' backup centers survive, and that the Suns' offense obviously is at full go and healthy. I think of those three teams, those three being sort of the most challenging potential opponents that I can envision right now. I think the Clippers are the one that I would be worried about the most. That's been what I've said for 3 years straight about this Suns team, and I'm not wavering. It's not so much that I think the Clippers are the best team in the West. I think I probably would have them as the third best team in the West right now. It's more so that the mismatches and the matchup challenges that they pose to their opponents are the most difficult to adjust to. And in the playoffs, that really goes a long way when the series is able to be played on your terms. And I think that's what Kawhi, Paul George, and the rest of their depth does to you. Let's swing around. Let's go to the teams that the Suns would be able to dominate the most. Some of the, maybe the teams that are obvious, but I want to also talk about some of the teams that are really good that I don't worry about quite as much. We'll do all that next. First, today's show brought to you by the FanDuel Sportsbook. It's the midway point of the NBA season, which is also the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, because new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's bonus bets back if your first bet does not win. That's right. You heard me right. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Then bet on everything from the money line to point scorers to threes drained. Let's go to the NBA here. We have championship odds. The Phoenix Suns are third, a pretty clear third. Plus 480, Denver is plus 750, those Clippers who I just mentioned at plus 1200. The best value that I actually see on this entire board is the Philadelphia 76ers at plus 1400. Thursday night's games, I believe, are already up here with game odds and lines at FanDuel. Friday's games potentially as well for the teams that don't play on Thursday. Plus, FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with the same game parlay, so don't miss the chance to get your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn. That's FanDuel.com/LockedOn to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Talked about the Clippers, Dallas, and the Nuggets in that first segment. Let's keep at the top of the standings here. I'm going to maybe throw you a little bit of a curveball. The cockiest of these Western Conference teams, for sure, as far as who the Suns should maybe be okay with facing, you know, the Memphis Grizzlies. They're 35-22. They have the second best point differential in the Western Conference. They have held steady at number two despite being 4-6 in their last 10 games. I think they had a pretty bad win streak prior to that. They're a little bit back on track now. Really missing Steven Adams. And so I don't want to judge them at their worst, but I do. Really, to me, that series would be about, because the Suns' offense is going to be so good that it's going to compromise the Grizzlies' ability to get out and transition, right? In a lot of cases with teams like that, we think of it as, can they create turnovers? Can they run off misses? Whatever. And we kind of forget of what happens in the NBA when, yes, things slow down in general, but also offenses, the best players are on the court more. And in the biggest moments, at least, offenses tend to make more shots. So I think you look at last year, the Grizzlies' half-court offense actually did get a little bit better from the regular season to the playoffs. I think that's the power of Ja playing more, maybe game plans tightening up, rotations trimming down, and they held up surprisingly well, and their transition offense was still a big weapon. But considering that's still going to be kind of their number one MO is try to steal some points on the fast break and squeak out enough in the half court to win some low scoring games and, you know, ugly up these matchups a little bit. The Suns' ability to just make shots all the time, like, you know, make difficult shots, run good offense, is going to neutralize that a little bit. And I think the series comes down to, with the matchups, and again, we haven't seen Durant, but we know what this team will look like. To me, it comes down to, can Jaren Jackson Jr. guard Kevin Durant without fouling and keep him relatively inefficient, maybe force some turnovers on Durant, etc., to weaken the Suns' offense enough and bring their firepower down a little bit? Because I actually do think that it could be a little bit of a Chris Paul series too, but I do think that Dylan Brooks is about as good as it gets against Devin Booker. I'm not saying that he's figured him out. I'm not saying Booker would be bad in that series. I'm not going to be crazy with it, but if you're game planning against Devin Booker, having Dylan Brooks to chase him around screens, keep him off his spots, and then having Steven Adams and Jaren Jackson Jr. to protect the rim, that's a pretty good starting point. The Chris Paul factor would be, you know, if Ja or Bane are having to guard him, then, you know, maybe he can get some separation off of a screen. Steven Adams is a drop big. That's how he's going to defend the pick and roll. And so that mid-range jumper will be there. Those passes to the corners and stuff like that will be there because they will then have to send help, right? We kind of know the trickle down of what a Chris Paul dominating moment looks like. But really, it's Durant. I would be interested in that matchup quite a bit. I think especially when you talk about the Suns, I would imagine what I would do from what we've seen in this Suns offense, the wrinkles they like to add is, I'm going to have Durant running off a lot of off-ball action, a lot of off-ball screens, pin downs, the Chicago stuff. If you've read any of the good breakdowns on this, on the fit with Durant and the Suns, a lot of them have pointed to the Chicago action, which is kind of this quick hitting, somewhat of a pin down screen at the elbow for Cam Johnson, for Mikal Bridges, for Devin Booker. They run it for everybody. That's kind of what I would do and make Jaren Jackson run around and try to guard that, right? So that's an interesting one that I think the Suns actually might relish. Some of the obvious ones, the Kings, I just don't think they would have a chance of defending the Suns. I mean, we saw how relatively easy it was for the Suns to score against the Kings last week without Durant, right? A week ago today on Tuesday without Durant, they made short work of Sacramento. Just no rim protection from that team and not a lot of really great wing defense either. So you don't have a great answer for Booker or for Ayton or for Durant. Rough. I think the obvious one then is the Timberwolves. They have Rudy. Maybe that helps against Ayton, although Ayton has always played pretty well against him. And then, Towns, interesting matchup, but Durant at least has the length and all that. I wouldn't worry. It's Anthony Edwards, and how do you guard him? But I actually do think Okogie is about as good as it gets if you're just crafting an Ant Edwards defender and, like, look, it's the Timberwolves. We're talking about a team with a negative point differential who's going to have very few games to reintegrate a superstar. They're not on the Suns level. That's not going to worry you, right? The Thunder, they're not worried about trying to beat somebody in the playoffs. They're into the play-in. They're going to have an awesome experience getting those guys that type of time. Maybe they steal a game or two. Maybe they're last year's Pelicans, but I'm not worried about them if I'm the Suns. Brings us to the Warriors. This is the matchup I'm probably most interested to see because it's actually one of the first ones I brought up when I was talking about some of the interchangeability and stuff like that related to Durant. We've seen Draymond Green guard Chris Paul in these matchups every time they've played each other. And I would just be interested to see what the next ripple off of that is. We assume Steph will be healthy for the playoffs, so you're talking about their normal lineup. To me, Wiggins guards Durant, right? Maybe Draymond still does guard Chris Paul, and then they go with Klay on Booker, right? And then they go with Looney on Ayton, Steph on Okogie or Craig, and that's kind of the trickle down. I think you could still see that they're, you know, they're still going to be switchable. They still have enough size. You know, you wouldn't hate it if Draymond or Looney ended up on Durant. You wouldn't hate it if Klay ended up on Durant. Steph, you never know. That's a weak point regardless, although he's gotten better defensively. So I'm just curious, I guess, to see, do the Warriors stand pat with how they've guarded them? Or do they adjust because of Durant? And then secondarily, how do the Suns guard Curry? Because Bridges was so good at it. He really was. Like, I know Curry scored 50 in that November game, and it was kind of like, let Curry cook and don't let anything else happen. But there's something to be said for that also, if you're Mikal Bridges, that Curry feasted on really tough shots. If you remember that game, guys, like, he was making floaters and long contested threes and a bunch of different stuff. And it's like, if you're going to take that degree of difficulty shot and make it, and you're going to score 50, but it's not going to really benefit anybody else, that's still a win, right? And so does that just become a Kogi? Do the Suns switch more? I don't know. I really don't know. And that would be pretty fascinating too. So I tend to think the Warriors don't have enough answers because the Suns already have been successful in that matchup, and the fact that Ayton has been able to really punish them for switching. I would still take the Suns, and I think that's still a matchup I would be okay with if I'm Phoenix, but it is interesting. Really, the point being here that I want to return to, I've said a few times, you want to try to have a matchup in the first round that allows you to not have to worry so much, where you can continue to develop momentum and chemistry as a unit. I don't know if the Suns are going to have that luxury. It would be very lucky if they could. You imagine, you know, New Orleans without Zion, Minnesota, some of those teams. But I don't think that's in the cards. I think the Suns could get as high as 3. Well, what would their reward for that be right now? Playing Dallas, right? They're at 5 right now. Maybe the best case scenario would be if they stay in the 4-5 and the Kings dip, and then they're able to play the Kings in the 4-5. Maybe they have home court advantage in that. Either way, that might be the best case scenario for right now, but you're probably not catching Memphis, because that would require them to continue to really lose a lot of games and somebody to catch up to them. You're probably not getting high enough to play the Pelicans or Wolves, because they're likely to be the 7, 8, or 9 seed. So that's where things are. That's the goal I think I would have. And those are the teams that I would try to avoid and the teams I would try to play. Let's get to the thing related to Kevin Durant that has me so hyped. And it's really looking into the crystal ball, looking into the future. We'll do that next. First, one more quick break. I'm going to tell you something very simple about Kevin Durant and the era that we find ourselves in for the Phoenix Suns with him. It's pretty obvious. It is that Durant is under contract for 3 more years after this. I don't think that's getting enough attention. I really don't. Like, I'm hearing this kind of vibe out there. I'm hearing 2 things. One is in one direction, which is enormous amount of pressure to win right now. This season is their window. They did an all-in trade. They gotta, you know, hit the ground running, make good on the deal that they just made, and they have to win a ring. Then I'm hearing on the other side of it, wait till 2026, which is goofy to me because you just absolutely have no idea what could happen by then. And honestly, that's post-Durant, so that doesn't even really align with my excitement, which is that they have Kevin Durant for the next 3 seasons, okay? I understand. Yes, he has had some version of a knee sprain multiple consecutive seasons. He had the Achilles tear when he missed a whole season not too long ago, all things considered. And he's 34 years old. But if you assume that Durant will at the very least be available for more than 50% of the games, and that as long as nothing severe happens, you're bound to get him for the playoffs each season. You're looking at a stretch here where the remainder of Durant's competitive years from 34 to 37, which we've seen LeBron, Chris Paul, multiple guys recently, although maybe it is just them super recently, but we've seen it in NBA history, guys who can adjust their game, be more shooters as they evolve. Durant doesn't need to evolve that much at all. Withstand father time and succeed late in their careers, coupled with Devin Booker's real legitimate prime. And are they a lock to be the best team in the NBA all those years? No, but I look at that and I feel like a little bit less pressure. I understand the Suns have an opportunity to win the finals. I just broke down the nuts and bolts of those matchups. I am not cutting them some slack or saying that they anything less than a championship would feel like a success. It will not. They should. But I guess what I'm saying is that level of confidence about their ability to contend for a title extends beyond this year, right? It's not so much that I'm saying this year has any less pressure. It's that I'm saying the window is open. Okay, the window is open. They have DeAndre Ayton as a trade chip after this. We don't know what will happen with Chris Paul. You could imagine a trade there. And they'll have two top 15 or so players. We don't know what Durant will continue to be, but we also don't know how much better Booker will get, right? That's going to be up there with just about anybody in the NBA. You know, we don't know. It's impossible to project Chris Paul or Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Memphis doesn't have that number two. Jokic will make the Nuggets a factor forever, but they don't have quite that star power, you know, either. Dallas, Kyrie and Luka, yes, scary. Just broke down some of the unique things about that matchup. Don't feel like that's a complete team yet. The Pelicans, health concerns, the Warriors, also getting old, but they're always going to be a factor. And then we don't know what the Timberwolves will develop into. We don't know what the Thunder will develop into, etc. The Eastern Conference, you know, Tatum and Brown, that'll be a factor. If Harden is going to stay in Philly, they'll have their top two. But you just look around the NBA, and it's hard for me, barring a severe drop-off from Kevin Durant or a severe injury, heaven forbid, that all of a sudden the Suns are going to just fall out of contention. And so that just has to factor in with what we're talking about here. I guess I just feel like there's so much being built up into this season, and rightly so, because again, they have the chance to go get that. But I don't hear enough when we're talking about evaluating the trade. You know, wow, the Suns gave up all their draft equity for Kevin Durant, and now they got to win a title. It's like, well, yes, but they gave up all that draft equity and multiple good players for Kevin Durant to have a chance to win a title the next four seasons. You know, it's just, it's very... It's odd to me when it's being talked about so urgently. Maybe that's just sports media. Maybe that's just something to talk about. Maybe that is just speaking to how wide open the West is, and that's just the more pertinent, current thing to analyze. But especially when, you know, if you're a Suns fan and you're thinking about this trade and whether it was worth it, quote unquote, or whatever, judging this year's championship is not really the way to evaluate this trade. You know, they very well could win a championship. Like, I guess that's another way to put it, right? Even if they win a championship this season, I would still say there would be expectations for them to do it again next year, right? Or to be in the mix to do it again next year. So just from every angle, the focus on the present with this trade feels a little strange to me, because even if you told me Chris Paul wasn't on the team past this year, maybe they don't even get a great deal for him. Maybe they just, let's just say, I don't think I would be able to wrap my head around this, but just for the sake of the mental experiment, let's just say they cut Chris Paul. They pay him the $15 million. They say, go home. You're bought out. Pick a team. Go to the Los Angeles Lakers, whatever you want to do. And they say, DeAndre Ayton, we're trading you for, you know, 75 cents on the dollar. John Collins, you're now a Phoenix Sun, and that's the team. Or whatever. I don't know, right? Wouldn't you feel like the Suns could be a championship contender next season, regardless of kind of what else shakes out? Like, that's one of the final thoughts I have on this thing. And we still have a few days to go before the game actually happens. We'll have two more shows, and then we'll be breaking down the game. We're going to preview a regular season game, Kevin Durant's debut, but just something to chew on. That'll wrap us up for today. A big thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen on this Tuesday. Hit follow or subscribe wherever you're finding us. We're on all your favorite podcast platforms, including YouTube. We're also at Locked On PHX Suns to follow on Twitter. Go make Locked On NBA your second listen, guys. That show's available on all podcast platforms as well. Catch up on all the news around the league, not just here in the Valley, with Locked On NBA. And I will talk to you all tomorrow.